Hey gang, welcome to the show. Welcome to National Bugle Radio on the public. Did I say public? The Republic Broadcasting. Republic Broadcasting? What the heck am I talking about? Okay, let's start that again. Welcome to National Bugle Radio on RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network. RepublicBroadcasting.org. It's a place you go to show your love and support for RBN. So go there, click on the donate button, and send a donation. Badly needed fundage. And while you're at it, go to Republic. I don't know what's going on today. Go to nationalbugle.com. That's where you can get the Groovy Co-Certified app, which is totally groovy. And it will help you in your quest to gain access to kosher certified food. We need access to non-kosher certified food. You can actually access the kosher certified food, not a problem. And if that's what you want, that's fine. But you don't have a problem. You don't have the problem. If you want non-kosher certified food, you need some help. And Co-Certified will provide that help for you. And it's a education on a very important topic. Well, you know, this is a program that doesn't shy away from very important topics. What are we going to talk about today? Well, here's the thing. I was listening to another podcast, which I do from time to time. I listen, and I'm not going to say whose podcast it was, but there was a question about abortion. And the question made the point that if it wasn't for abortion, there would be tons of additional black babies being born. And then the host just kind of dismissed it out of hand and said, we're against abortion. Abortion's murder. You're a fed. And the problem is, okay, both the position that abortion is about the only thing that is slowing our demographic demise, and the position that abortion is killing, murdering, if you will, innocent fetuses, innocent preborn babies. These are both absolutely true statements. They both are. So what do you do about it? Well, that's what we got to talk about, because these are both absolutely true statements. Does that mean you have to support abortion if you don't already, or you have to oppose abortion if you don't already? Well, I want to talk about this some, not the whole show, but for a while. And I think there's somewhere we can get that is a nuanced position. All right. So I'm going to assume that the bulk of my audience probably opposes abortion on moral grounds, which is something I absolutely understand. So I don't need to go into the details of that, because I think everybody understands it. And even if you're not one of those who opposes it on moral grounds, I think the moral grounds are very easily understandable. Okay, so you got a little fetus in there, it's never done anything wrong, and then all of a sudden you get these cold, hard steel instruments coming in and doing nasty things, and that's that. And, you know, we can all look at that, and of course the little fetus was a human. Now, of course, we do live with like the killing of the animals we eat, you know, like a full-grown cow, a full-grown pig, a full-grown sheep, whatever. And some of us, you know, those are like animals you can actually see and touch, whereas the fetus isn't. And that leads some people to become, along the same logics, along kind of the same pro-life logics, the reluctance to kill other beings leads people to become vegetarians, and I understand that too. Although other people say, well, I understand that, but, you know, we do have to eat, and we evolved to eat meat, and so it's kind of something that's necessary. But at any rate, let's get back to the abortion thing. So I think the aversion to the taking of innocent human life is very understandable. Now, let's look at the, and we don't have to go into all the details, but the position that if it weren't for abortion, we would have several hundred thousand black or Hispanic, because both blacks and Hispanics have much higher abortion rates than whites, because they have much higher pregnancy rates than white. They get pregnant a lot more than whites. And so they have abortions, not surprisingly, a lot more than whites as well. And, you know, right now we went from 20 million blacks. And, you know, and I'm not saying, oh, you know, it's desirable that blacks' babies get killed or any babies get killed. That's not the point. Let's just go over some basic thumbnail sketch numbers. So you had, in 1960 census, you had about 20 million blacks, about 160 million whites, a few million others, more or less like that. It was more or less like that. So you had basically an 8-to-1 ratio between whites and blacks, 8-to-1 ratio. That meant blacks were about 11% of the population. Whites were about 88%, although in that white figure, it did include at the time Mexicans. It wasn't a separate Hispanic category in 1960. Mexicans might have been about 2% of the population. So then you'd be down to about 86% whites, but whatever. But the Mexicans who were in the country were pretty white. So anyway, it was about an 8-to-1 ratio. And now, so blacks have doubled their population in the past 60 years from 20 million to 40 million. Whites have gone from about 160 million, they've inched up, not very much at all, to somewhere maybe 190 million. I think it's still south of 200 million. So it really hasn't increased very much. It certainly hasn't doubled. And then, of course, you've got another 100 million people who are in the country now whose ancestors weren't here in 1960, about 100 million. These are pretty rough numbers. Maybe, you know, depending on how you figure illegal aliens and things like that, maybe some calculations might have it at 80 million or whatever. There's 60 million Hispanics, something like that. Whereas in 1960, like I said, a couple million Mexicans, very small number of Cubans. The Cuban revolution had only just happened, so you were just starting to get some Cubans. You had some Puerto Ricans, obviously West Side Story, that was a reflection of something that was going on. But at any rate, not very many. And now, you know, like 60 million Hispanics, you got, how many millions of Asians would you have? 15 million Asians, maybe? Something like that, 18 million Asians, whereas it would have been less than a million before. So, I mean, You've got all this. So you've got this massive demographic change going on. But you're having, you know, you had the black population double. And yet, I believe you would find that you've probably had as many, if not more, abortions of black babies than live births. Right? What would that mean? And of course, Roe versus Wade, that, what is that, 1971 or 72? It was the early 1970s. And so obviously many of the babies that were aborted in the 1970s, 1980s, even 1990s, many of them would have gone on to have their own babies. So So the demographics of the country would be absolutely, positively different. As for whites, yeah, you would presumably you'd have more whites too, but in absolute terms, there are more black babies aborted than white babies, Hispanics as well. So, because whites just don't get pregnant very much, and they're the least likely to have an abortion when they do get pregnant. And then, of course, we live in a country, and I just want to reiterate, my purpose here is not to try to change anybody's position. I'm not trying to get anybody who's pro-life to stop being pro-life. That's not what I'm trying to do here. You'll see where I'm going with this. But we do have to have, like, you know, full understanding. And like I say, I'm concentrating on this side of the issue more because I think it's harder to understand. I think the pro-life side of it is very easy to understand. And I'm not dismissing it because it's easy to understand. I'm not saying it's simplistic. I'm just saying it's actually easy to understand. Okay, but with the we would have very, very, very different demographics, presumably, if abortion had been illegal and all these babies were born. Now, we also live in a society where once a baby is born, they have certain guarantees. Okay? They are guaranteed as children to education, public education. They get that as a guarantee. They are guaranteed to health care. It's very easy to get Medicaid or CHIP health insurance for children under the age of 18. There are programs there. And, you know, most children, when they are born, most children in the United States, a majority of children are born on Medicaid. They are born on the public dime. And, of course, the aborted babies, the babies who most of the time when people are children, babies are aborted, it's parents who don't want them. Occasionally, it could be a married parents who decide, or at least the woman decides, the woman or both together, decide they don't want an additional baby. But the vast majority is going to be unwed. It's going to be unwanted. That's the vast majority. But all these children, so they would be, you know, most, like I say, most babies are in America born on welfare, on Medicaid. And it would be even more so with the babies who would be born if they were forced to be born because abortion was illegal. You would also have, I mean, a higher, already, like in the black community, already you've got well over 70% of babies are born to unwed mothers, and I'm sure you would find, I don't have all the data on this, but I don't think it's controversial to say that, you know, among all subcategories, black or Hispanic or white, the unwed, mothers of the aborted fetuses are even more likely to be unwed than the mothers of live births, okay? And go on down the line. And so, basically, these babies who have been aborted, but if they were forced to be born, you would have much higher rates of welfare dependency, everything else, everything that comes along with it. So the children will be raised on the taxpayer dime. And in many cases, I don't know how many, but in a lot of cases, the mother or the father would not even be taking care of the child. They would be put into the foster care system. And ultimately, many of them would be adopted by people like Coney Island Baby. What's her name? You know, the Supreme Court Justice. Something, Coney Barrett. What's her name? Amy Coney Barrett. Okay. Those types of people would be adopting them. And in many cases, instead of having their own children. Now, you know, Amy Coney Island Baby had five of her own kids and then adopted two black kids from Haiti. But, you know, this is how it goes. So we're in a country where all the babies are guaranteed. They're guaranteed education. They're guaranteed health care. You know, the biggest form of welfare is aid for families with dependent children. So they would be raised in many, many cases on the taxpayer's dime. And already we see, you know, welfare dependency, especially among blacks, but among single mothers, high. It's very high. And the children, the female children of welfare dependent mothers are more likely to be welfare dependent themselves. And the boys are more likely to go to prison. So this is what you're looking at. And then, you know, finally, so we have all these guarantees for babies who are born. All these guarantees, certainly through childhood, but then even then, we don't just let people die on the streets. So if they're in prison, we're going to take care of them. If they're disabled, you know, if they're unemployed, they get taken care of. They get Medicaid. There's supplemental security income. There's all sorts of things. And so you're guaranteeing people tax, and some of the kids who would get aborted would grow up and be very productive. But in general, you know, there's going to be an awful lot of dependence. And here's the thing. If what abortion does is it delinks conception from birth, right? Babies who are born have all these guarantees. But babies who are conceived, an awful lot of them get aborted, and they don't have the guarantees until they're born. But banning abortion then means as soon as they're conceived, they've got all these guarantees. And we've got a situation where young, very irresponsible kids have a lot of sex and conceive a lot of babies. And so we've got a situation where without abortion, you would have whenever young, and they could be white, they could be black, but or Hispanic, but they're more likely to be black or Hispanic than white. We know that, much more likely. And every time, you know, young kids just doing their thing because of, you know, Hollywood media, because of public school education, because of whatever, because of their nature, every time they conceive a child, then the taxpayer is on the hook for the next 80 years, right? And here's one other thing. One of the main, for whites and for Asians, one of the main things driving down birth rates among whites and Asians is economics. If they don't feel secure economically, whites and Asians are less likely to have children, which is not the case of these other groups. But whites and Asians are less likely to have children if they don't feel secure economically. And to the extent they're overtaxed, they're less likely to feel secure economically. So you see where this is going. Now, we've got the break coming up. And like I say, my aim is not to change your mind and turn you into pro-choice. It's not my aim. But you'll have to wait till the other side of the break to see where I'm going.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed the newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
The newspaper? Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, a majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper does not give out the important attention on what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
I'm back, and I promised you would see where I'm going with all of this. So, the Roe versus Wade, are we up at the 50th anniversary of it yet? Is it this year? I should at least confirm that. Okay, through the magic of the pause button, I went and checked it. And I mean, the actual decision was January 1973, so we're at 48 and a half years. But, you know, the case was, I guess it was referred to the Supreme Court in 71, and it stems from a 1969 pregnancy. So we're at the half century mark. And what we've had in the half century since then is the number one issue for conservatives in general, and certainly for evangelical Christians in particular, not just Christian Zionists, but evangelical Christians in general, but conservatives too, has been abortion. That's been the number one issue. It's taken up the most political space. It's taken up the most oxygen. You know, in some years, like right after 9/11, I guess wars for Jews might have been a higher priority for conservatives. But in general, if you look at this past 50 years, this has been the number one issue for people. And where has it gotten people? Where has it gotten conservatives? Okay. Has it gotten them anywhere? I mean, you might have had, I guess there was, what, the Casey versus Planned Parenthood decision in the 1990s or something, when the governor of Pennsylvania sued Planned Parenthood or something. I don't know. I don't even remember. It's not, this is not my big issue. So, I mean, there's been some little incremental movement here and there, but in general, there hasn't, things in general haven't changed. So half a century of political capital, and what has it gotten? It's gotten the, people have made no progress on it. And at what cost? At what cost? Look at the, just for instance, this is just an example. You look at the election last November, okay? And Donald Trump, during his 4 years, got three Supreme Court justices on the bench, okay? Including Amy Coney Island Baby in the month before the election, like immediately before the election, he got her seated on the bench. And then when push came to shove and the election was faked and Trump's legal team went to the Supreme Court for relief, all three of these justices said, sorry, we're not going to listen. We're not going to listen. So, you know, where did these justices come from? Why are they there? And the reason those justices were appointed was in 2016, when Donald Trump was running for president in the primaries. And you had Ted Cruz, who's a big fake evangelical, was his main opponent. In order to assure evangelicals, and it was specifically evangelicals, of his pro-life bona fides, because, of course, Donald Trump had been a New York liberal and had been pro-choice for much of his life, he submitted a list of 30-some-odd justices that he promised he would choose from. He said, I'm going to choose from this list. I guess the Federalist Society was involved in drafting the list, but the list was aimed at evangelicals. It's like, these are the people, and you can check these people. These are people that you can be pretty sure are going to take a pro-life stance on things. That was the whole thing. And so he really tied his hands on appointing these justices. Had he not tied his hands, would he have appointed better justices? Well, honestly, given the people he appointed to everything else, there's no telling. He didn't do a very good job appointing. But the fact of the matter is that this short list of justices from whom he would select, judges from whom he would select, it was designed with evangelicals in mind and assuring them that he was absolutely pro-life. And so, I mean, that's just an example of where this has led us. It's been the top priority. Abortion has been the top priority of conservatives of the Republican Party in terms of domestic policy, and I think in terms of policy in general, and they've lost on it. You know, there's been other things, like the elite probably don't care about abortion. The Paul Ryans probably don't really care about it. They'll mouth it, but they want, you know, my low taxes. They want my tax cuts. And, you know, the neocons want my wars for Jews. And they've won on these things. They won on those issues, the issues that they actually care about. Okay, we're up at the break. I've got a little more to say about this.
And he watched and waited till his billy boiled. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you. And your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here's a testimonial from Amazon.com. I am only 40, but I have put my body through hell working in manufacturing for 20 years. I recently started to notice a buzzing feeling along with a stuttering sensation with my heart. I had a full cardio stress done, which I passed. I decided to try Extendivite after getting the jingle stuck in my head. Halfway through the bottle, I really did notice a difference. After getting home from work, I would just sit in a chair for a few hours feeling like crap, and this stuff reduced that feeling along with heart discomfort to almost nothing. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
It's happening, ladies and gentlemen. We here at RBN are working with Front Sight Firearms Training Institute to bring our audience the best in combat, tactical, and defensive firearms training. Whether you're a private citizen who is new to firearms, or you have a concealed weapon permit, and want a level of training that surpasses what you've received from your local gun range, Front Sight provides priceless education and skills taught by seasoned law enforcement, military, and private citizen instructors to levels that far exceed law enforcement and military standard. With nearly a million responsible citizens trained from every town, city, and state from across the United States, Front Sight has bolstered the Patriot movement to a whole new level. Contact Dan Sutterfield by phone at 573-762-2356 or 573-465-2356 or shoot him an email at domedan, D-O-M-E-D-A-N, at hotmail.com. This is a limited time opportunity. Don't miss it.
And, you know, so I've been talking about the abortion issue. I don't know. We're already halfway through the show. I don't know if I really want to pound on it for the rest of the broadcast, but this is where I'm going. You know, when somebody's running for a president, somebody's running for Congress, and they might put out a list of their positions, right, position papers, and they might have, especially people running for lower office, and, you know, you're walking down the street and somebody sticks a little trifold in your hand, or you get something through the mail, and it's got like a list of bullet points of their positions. And, you know, this can be very, very misleading or even dishonest. You get this bullet list of positions, but what is often much more important than where they stand on an issue is where that issue sits in their list of priorities, right? So it's very easy to say, like a lot of people could say, I was against the Iraq war, you know. But did they do anything? Did
did they actually do anything? And, you know, some people worked hard on an issue and some people don't work hard on an issue. And that's really what you want to know. Now, I said that I'm not going to try to tell anybody who is against abortion on moral grounds to stop being against it on moral grounds. So, but here's the thing. We have to have priorities. The priority in terms of political energy, political capital over the past 50 years, I would argue, from conservatives, has been on abortion. And because the focus has been on abortion, because that's been the litmus test, all sorts of other things, and it's been a losing issue. No, we conservatives, I can't even say we, but conservatives have made no real progress on it. And, you know, while they're placing their attention on a losing fight against abortion, you've had the borders just wide open, 100 million people from other countries, either, you know, immigrating themselves or they're the children of the immigrants. And, of course, you've had all the other stuff, you know, all the anti-white hate and everything else. But, you know, the most cohesive, arguably, the most cohesive white subgroup, these evangelical Christians, this has been their issue. And they've gotten nowhere with it, you know, with their secondary issue being wars for Jews, wars for Israel. And congratulations on that one, because you got somewhere with it. So what I'm saying is we've got to have priorities. And I have nothing against people who I'm not, you know, and I'm not even saying I'm for abortion. For me, this has always been a very low, it's always been low on my priorities. And I've always had mixed feelings about it. I've never been pro-choice or pro-life, per se. I've always had mixed feelings because I see, I do see, you know, different angles. I look at it from different angles. But I also look at it as something that has just taken up so much political oxygen at the expense of many other things where progress could have been made and where massive losses have been sustained. So the thing is, but this is what I'm saying. You're not going to make abortion illegal. You're not going to be overturning abortion anytime soon. Even, you know, with Coney Island Baby and Kegs Kavanaugh and Neil Gorsuch, even with these people on the bench, it's not going to get overturned. So put it on the back burner, okay? You can preach it in your churches and in your personal life. Good luck with that. You know, we've got a lot, and when I say good luck with that, I mean it sincerely, not like pejoratively. Really good luck. It's taken up too much oxygen. We have to concentrate on other things. And you can still be against it. It's just the fact of the matter is we have things aren't going to change on that. And we have some fish that have to be fried. And if we don't fry these other fishes, it's just game over. Okay, so you got to just put it on the back burner. Okay, I'm going to pause and either I'm going to think of something else very important to say or I'm going to start talking about something else. Oh, hey, I got one last point to make about this. You know, as you all know, I came from an anti-war, pro-environmentalist, mostly anti-war movement, the 1970s, 1980s. And in the 1980s, I mean, I was saying very similar things about abortion, in that a lot of people in the 1980s amongst progressives were making protection of reproductive rights or a woman's right to choose, making that into their top priority. I said, well, actually, shouldn't we try to stop wars? And I think the so-called left lost an awful lot of battles because it put so much energy into protecting abortion rights, protecting reproductive rights, which ultimately they got anyway. But but we wound up with a whole bunch of wars and lost on a lot of other more important things. So I just wanted to say that because, yeah. All right, I'll be right back. Okay, I thought of something different to talk about. So, listen, gang. We need to learn how to talk in a more sensitive manner about Jews. Yes, that's me, who just a few minutes ago was talking about the top priority for some people being wars for Jews. The same Patrick Slattery, whose very motto, very catchphrase is, I'd rather be ruled over by Chinamen than Jews. We have to learn how to, forget the word sensitive, how about more temperate? We have to learn, not that we always have to talk that way, because things move really fast, and there's, you know, you got all this stuff going on. It's moving really fast. You got, you know, the forced vaccine. This is going really fast. You or a family member could be coerced into taking a dangerous experimental vaccine within a matter of weeks. Maybe you already have. And is this only Jews? No, it's not only Jews, but it is. It could not be happening outside the context of domination by a hostile Jewish elite. And I say that with full knowledge that, you know, maybe in... Is anybody in China getting coerced into this? I don't think the Asians are really getting coerced into it. Maybe there are some. Maybe in Korea, maybe in Japan, there's some people who are more or less getting coerced into this. But, you know, worldwide, the coronavirus, this corona hoax... I'm not saying, you know, obviously Bill Gates and Fauci, they're not Jews. Some people say Bill Gates is Jewish. I don't think he is. A lot of these pharma companies that are pursuing the vaccines have Jewish presidents or high executives. Does Johnson & Johnson, as far as I don't know, Johnson's about as least Jewish a name. As less Jewish a name as you can get, but I don't know. I haven't looked at their board of directors or anything. It's not exclusively Jewish, but it's largely Jewish. And you know, the coup d'état against President Trump. A lot of this stuff, it's happening fast and furious, and very much at our detriment. And Jews are instrumental or central in it. So it's hard. It's hard. That's why I say we have to learn how to do this. Why do we have to learn how to do this? Well. You know, not so much so that we can talk to Jews about it, because Jews have been conditioned. You know, I'm talking about Mr. Greenberg at the next desk or whatever. They have been conditioned to be hypersensitive. You can't be sensitive enough to Jews who have been hypersensitized to the Holocaust narrative. But we do have to be able to talk to each other, because ultimately it's ultimately not Jews whose permission we have to ask in order to reestablish control of our country. It's our own people. And if we sound like a bunch of neo-Nazis who are going to put Jews in camps and send blacks back to Africa, it's like the old Beatles song Revolution. If you go carrying pictures of Chairman Mao, you ain't gonna make it with anyone anyhow. Is that a good rhyme? So, I think that was how the lines went. And you know, so, I mean, obviously if you listen to me, it's hard for me. I mean, I'm critiquing Jews all the time. But this is important. Jews critique us all the time. And so we have to learn. And I'm not saying that I can teach you in the next 15 minutes how to talk, you know, in the right way. I'm working on it myself. You know, we have been subjected to decades and decades of critique. And when I first heard the title of Kevin MacDonald's book, Culture of Critique, like, I thought that was a pretty lame title, right? I really did. But honestly, that's really it. I mean, we have been subject to all sorts of criticism. And yet, to levy any criticism at Jews, I mean, at non-whites in general, for us as whites to criticize anybody else's white supremacy, but to criticize Jews is just, it's Nazism. It's Hitler all over again. So it's not easy, and it's not just Jews who have been hypersensitized to this, but it's, to a large extent, it's our own people. And this is, we have to get through to our own people. We have to, and, you know, dropping the N-word, using the N-word with reckless abandon doesn't, it's not any better than carrying pictures of Chairman Mao, frankly. So, you know, we have to learn how to talk. Now, and it's tough, and everybody has their own way. Now, I've described myself as a Putinist. What does a Putinist mean? What is the fundamentals of Putin? And, you know, that's different things to different people. And I know I've had people call into this show and say Putin's a communist, which actually, no, I mean, what's going on in Russia in the past 20 years doesn't have anything to do with communism. This is, it's post-communism. He's actually turned it into a pretty normal country. But you'll hear from some corners of the tubes that we know as the internets. You hear from some quarters, some of the tubes, that Putin's actually a shill and he's controlled by Chabad Lubavitch and this and that. And that, you know, he was installed by Jewish oligarchs, which he was. He was installed by Jewish oligarchs because Jewish oligarchs led Russia. I mean, they controlled Russia in the 1990s. But, you know, my take on Vladimir Putin is that he bit the hand that fed him. To an extent, he laid down the law and said, okay, you have these riches that, for the most part, were obtained legally, even if it's very unfortunate that it was legal, but it was legal. You can keep your fiefdoms if you stay out of politics. Although there are some people who, some of the Jewish oligarchs didn't 100% stay out of politics, and they support Putin, and perhaps get some influence there too. Maybe they're buying some influence, buying some leverage or whatnot. But ultimately, Putin has done a very good job for his people. And, you know, he expelled some of the oligarchs, he jailed some of the oligarchs, and some of them are still there doing quite well. And, you know, some people want to fault him because he didn't go, you know, full little mustache. He went comb over rather than little mustache. But, you know, the little mustache guy, everything didn't actually work out well in the end for him and his country. And, I think we have to be realistic. And so what would Putinism mean in America? Putinism would mean, well, I guess it would mean a resurgence of Christianity like it meant in Russia. It would mean that, for the most part, that policies would be made with the interests of the majority population in mind, not necessarily always to the expense of minorities, not infringing on minority rights, but certainly in the interest of the majority population, which hopefully, I mean, I'm not strictly an ethnic nationalist. I'm actually more of a hybrid nationalist, where you have kind of a combination of civic nationalism and ethnic nationalism. And how does that work? Well, I mean, I think it works kind of like it did, not just in Russia, but in the Soviet Union, where people from non-Russian minorities were inculcated into a Soviet nationalism that did emphasize the central role of Russians as kind of like the big brother ethnic group. And if we had the a lot of these post 1965 immigrants could fit into the society, but if they're fitting into the society by trying to undermine the position and denigrate the history of everything that happened before 1965, that's not helpful. All right, I'll be right back.
Traveling in a freighter combi on a hippie trailhead full of zombies, I met a strange lady. She made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, "Do you come from a land down under?"
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
For over 20 years now, Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here is a testimonial from Amazon.com. I received an arterial switch at birth. In my mid-20s, I started getting slight runs of NSVT. Nothing too serious, but enough to cause worry. I started taking Extendivite a little over 2 years ago, and it helped cut the palpitations and NSVT down drastically. This isn't a cure-all supplement. I strongly recommend a good diet and exercise to aid in any heart troubles you may be having, and I strongly recommend giving Extendivite a try. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Kosher-tified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Kosher-tified app can make a huge difference for your future. Okay, so is this Get Real episode of National Bugle Radio? So Get Real, you've been bashing your head against a wall on abortion for 50 years and haven't gotten anywhere. Time to put it on the back burner for a little while and concentrate on some other things. That was one of the messages. Let's try to be realistic about nationalism and Jews. I don't think it's realistic to expect or even productive to think that we're going to be expelling all the people with little hats. And is it even desirable? I mean, if we could criticize them the way they've criticized us, I don't think it would even be necessary. It would erode their political power immensely. Is it okay if they have some economic power? To an extent, yeah, it's okay. As long as they can't use it to dominate us politically. As long as we can speak as openly about them without fear of retribution for being critical. As long as we can speak critically about them, then we can win the day. We can have our way, and it's okay if they're here. It's okay if, you know, we can handle things. It's okay if they'd be here, because there's the things that are really harmful they wouldn't be able to get away with anymore. And really, same with a lot of other groups. The same with the blacks. If we could speak critically about others the way they can speak about us, and we're a majority, and we do the most of the productive work and pay most of the taxes and this and that, then we can create a society where blacks will be doing fine, better than now at least, without impinging on us. And the same with post 1965 immigrants and their progeny. If we can speak on our own behalf, and people can acknowledge the role of white people as having created that 1965 society that everybody else in the world wanted to come to, and be celebrated for it instead of reviled for it. Obviously, China's actually becoming a nice place. Maybe a lot of Chinese people would want to go back to China. If I was Korean American or Japanese American, the Japanese have been here so long, I don't know if they could even fit into their society. But the Koreans who immigrated here, why not immigrate back? I'm not telling them to immigrate back, but I'm just saying it's a nice place. And, you know, other countries could be like that too. But at any rate, the main thing is we have to learn how to speak right. So if we can speak so that our own people can listen to us, I guess that's the main thing. All right, well, that's all the time I have for today. I'll be back again next time with another exciting episode of National Youth Radio.
Drifting to and fro, dreamy, dreamy Chinatown, always night so bright, night seems light and life seems bright, in dreamy Chinatown.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.